The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Understand from people I was talking to that a week just went by. I missed it. I blinked. Friday it is, the third Friday of the month, and that means Admiral Cooper stops by for a visit. And going to be a little change of pace tonight. Should be a very interesting... Well, we're going to survey Clark McClellan's book. Now, for you long-term listeners, you'll know Clark was a guest on this program for over 20 years. And he used to write a chapter at a time and try to sell those to keep himself afloat. His, I don't know what you'd call it, pension, whatever NASA used, was cut off. He left NASA under strained circumstances, and they pulled the plug. So he was always trying to make it. I'm sure many of you remember this. And then his health took a tragic turn for the worse. But all this time, he's writing chapters. And I think we aired about 36 chapters, something like that. I can't be sure. But along comes Harry Cooper. And he met with Clark. And Clark said, as he did to me, in all honesty, facts are facts, I give you full permission to publish the book in book form. Now, I don't have the time. Neither does Harry Cooper, but Harry took on the project, and he has produced a magnificent book of all Clark's chapters, which, unfortunately, in many cases were very poorly. They were a mess. All right, Harry has to dove into this and straighten it all out. And we're really looking forward to the book. It's going to be terrific. Welcome back, Admiral Cooper.
Thank you. I'm laughing because the term goat rodeo keeps popping into my mind. I've gone through that book four full times already, editing and everything. And as you know, I'd be halfway down, say, like chapter 20 or so, and everything's looking fine. And all of a sudden, bang, the whole damn book reformatted itself. And the margins are different now. There were hidden commands in there. And I am not a computer expert, but... the damn book would reformat itself halfway through. I'd have to start at page one again. And my God!
Yes.
Plus the fact he's a brilliant engineer, but he would never make it as an English teacher.
Well, his middle name is not Hemingway. Okay.
No, that's for sure.
But the point is, the data is there. And we really, over the years, spent a lot of time on this, and I can't wait to see it straightened out and presented in the way that you present all of your books from Shark Hunters. They're just
superb. Yeah, it's all cleaned up now, and it reads real smoothly.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be terrific, and I know that because I know the information in it, and I know what's coming. And for many of you out there who don't remember Clark or the visits we've had and all the times together, this is going to knock your socks off. This is really one of the most important insider books ever on the NASA space program and the extraterrestrial import is part and parcel of the whole story. It's all there.
That is for sure.
So when you were going through the book, and I don't know which chapters were your favorites and so forth, but we have a whole lot of pictures up there tonight we're going to look at. When you went through the book, what was it that really surprised you the most? Now, that said, let me just rewind a little bit. Harry Cooper knows more about World War II history, real history, than anyone I'll ever know. And Clark came to know many of the German scientists, in fact, probably most all of them, who were in fact NASA. They were in fact our space program. Our first director of NASA for 12 or 13 years was Dr. Kurt Debus. Dr. Kurt Debus was Hitler's director of rocket works at Peenemünde, the V-1, the V-2, and plans for more extravagant and further reaching four-stage rockets.
The A-9 and A-10.
Right. We got Dr. Kurt Debus, his number one, Wernher von Braun, and hundreds of technicians and engineers. It was a technology trade. What was the give up? We gave up the right, or made the deal, to allow the top echelons of the German government, and that includes Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun, to go to Argentina, or points that they might have chosen, which were different than Argentina, but they were in South America, Brazil, Paraguay, Colombia, etc. They went down there and were hidden away with our full knowledge and support at the highest levels. I might say that J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI did not know about this, apparently, for about 2 years. He was not even in the loop. That's how secret this was.
Yeah, it was about the middle of 1947 when he got the word from Truman, back off. No more chasing Hitler down in South America. They knew in my book, Hitler in Argentina, we've got dozens of files in there from the FBI.
Sure.
Dated 1945, 46, and first half of 47, where they were exchanging information, where Hitler was, where he was going, who knew him, et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly it just quit because they were ordered to back off.
Well, this is going to be a book that tells such a story, shocking things, which we'll mention to one degree or another as we go through the photos and things. The book, I know Clark will be very happy about it when he gets a copy in his hands. His
you
health
bet.
Is not good. And we went through an awful lot together, Clark and I, and then Harry and I. In fact, I connected Harry with this wonderful opportunity to take this material and turn it into a Cooper classic, which is going to certainly be the case.
Cooper classic, eh? Okay.
It's spelled with two K's. Cooper classic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. So how long have you been working on it beside 25 hours a day? I know it's been I get these calls. You wouldn't believe what I'm going through. You wouldn't believe the mess that this stuff is. And I said, yes, I would, because I posted most of the chapters. I think I had 36 of them on the site. So I know.
Well, I'd be going through and all of a sudden, you know, it's supposed to be 12 point times New Roman, TNR. And going along and all of a sudden it's 17.5. Who the hell has a 17.5 high type face.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
Exactly. And then I'd fix that, bring it down to 12-point, and then suddenly I'd find that, yeah, he's using 12-point. The typeface is 12-point, but the line spacing is 20-point. What the heck? Right. It just was, I had to re-edit the thing line by line, all 430,000 words or whatever it is, about 300 pages again and again and again, right. But we finally got it right. And Jeff Carson over in Europe, he's our proofreader. He went through it again and again, and he says, who wrote this thing? And we both agreed. The text, the information in there is incredible, but, you know, it's just a goat rodeo in the layout. But we got it straightened out. It looks good now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I remember talking with Clark, as I did. He would call often, and I kept urging him, Clark, when he'd get real depressed and in pain, and he eventually lost half of his leg to diabetes, and he was not doing well. And he used to come on the program here, Harry. I don't know if you were listening back then. He would be crying in pain, literally crying in pain.
Well, that happens when we're on the phone together. We'll be talking, and all of a sudden I'll hear, ah! Right, what's the matter, Clark? Wait a minute. Yeah. And,
It. You could do a good Clark McClellan. That's good.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously. And I always pushed him off air when we'd talk. I said, Clark, you have got to keep writing. For God's sakes, don't take it with you.
Oh, absolutely.
You're going to be around. You're going to be around. And he kept writing. But I must say that there are still things that Clark has not disclosed. You know it.
Well,
I
the one thing
it.
You and I are talking about, he would never say who was the second man who went with him to Kecksburg. But he did tell me during one of our conversations 2-3 months ago, he did tell me who the man was, and I taped it. I tape all our messages or phone calls with Clark. He insisted that I tape them. And so I don't remember the guy's name, but I'm going to run back through it, and because I know you want to know, but it won't be in the book. But there are
He promised to tell me. He gave me his word of honor he'd tell me before he died.
Okay, well, I'll make sure that happens, because I'll pass it on to you from the tape.
Well, you need to find out who you've got the name. You need to trace a little bit and find out where the guy figured into paperclip. We can say people were guessing it was Hans Kammler, but it is not Hans Kammler. It wasn't Kammler.
Right, so it wasn't Kammler.
We can put that much on the table. But it was a very...
Everybody knows Kammler committed suicide in April of 45.
Right, well, he died within days of Bormann on that front of that Soviet tank with his Panzerfaust, wasn't it? He was trying to take out a tank. Something like that.
Right after Hitler shot himself in the head.
Twice. And then there was a story about how many thousands of scientists and technologists. Now, that said, as we go through the pictures tonight, it's going to be interesting to have all of you who don't know about this. We're going to spend some time about, I don't know how many minutes, but on the Kecksburg crash. Okay? Now, that is part of the technology that I suggested to Clark, and he agreed that not all of it, but much of it went to the Soviets. There was a race to catch and capture these scientists. They knew where they were. There was intel. There was all that. And they got what we called at least a lot of the people who were working on Die Glocke. That's called the bell. And that craft, well, it was a power source more than anything, but that power source was apparently what crashed in Kecksburg, and it emanated from the Soviet Union. That's what we think.
Well,
anyway,
that's more than
part of it.
More than what we think, and without getting into too much detail, the fellow that you and I know, that you met through us, who's a freshly retired spook from over there. He said definitely this was the Glocka that the Russians had gotten, and through some kind of an agreement or whatever, it was a controlled descent in Kecksburg. And the Russians also had the equipment, the machinery to make the plasmoidal substance inside called Xerum 525, X-E-R-U-M, Xerum 525, which I guess was some kind of a lubricant, because inside the Glocka were two contra-rotating cyclotrons, and they would, one inside the other, and they would rotate at incredible speeds. And so the Xerum 525 was a lubricant and also some kind of a chemical reactor. And the scientists that worked close to it all died very suddenly. And from the descriptions, it was probably radiation poisoning. And I don't know if you would say it's a power source, but it appears it was meant to bend time. And it was used for the Philadelphia experiment, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
The technology spun off in a couple of directions after the war.
Yeah.
But during the war, there's no question that the Germans were many decades ahead in this technology. And it is also postulated that there was some outside help from off-planet at one point or another in the development of this technology. This goes back to the Vril Society and those lovely girls who built their own UFOs and then in 1945 left a note saying we're going back to Aldebaran, and they left.
Oh, incidentally, I misspoke a minute ago. I said cyclotrons. No, I meant centrifuges.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever called me dumb and didn't mean it.
Right.
But and this, what's her name, Marie Orsic, who was one of the...
Maria Orsic was the number one, and she developed their own program. She was channeling, she was being given information, she channeled it, wrote it down, how to build flying saucers, UFOs, whatever you want to call them. Some enormous
size. And she was drop-dead gorgeous from the pictures I've seen.
Right. Well, all of them were. There were several of them, and it's also suggested that they may not have been here as children. They may have been hybrids. Who knows? But they were very special people. The SS developed its own program of unidentified flying objects, what we call today. These were very special craft designed to use in aerial combat. They were offensive weapons, the SS versions, but they didn't get put into service, partly because I think the orders came down from Hitler that we cannot take a chance on one of these being shot down in enemy territory. It was that advanced. That's why they weren't used as they could have been. That's my guess. Now, I have
could've
a
been.
Video up. I have, as you've seen, Harry, I have a video up with two black and white film clips of two different types of, we'll call them flying saucers, discs, just for fun. You've seen that video, I think, with the two pieces of film. This is real film.
You sent me copies of that. And for that matter, I saw a UFO myself way back a million years ago when I was just fresh out of the Air Force.
The one you saw in the bathroom?
No.
Sorry.
I was on a date. This was long before I ever met my wife, ages before. And I was on a date, and we were in a drive-in movie theater on the south side of Chicago, south of Chicago.
The only way to fly, the drive-in
movie. Yeah, right. And we were watching Blue Hawaii with Elvis Presley. And then all of a sudden, now we were looking straight to the south. That's where the screen was, and all of a sudden this incredible light was coming up. You couldn't tell how high it was because it was just a light, and it was coming up from the south slowly, and then suddenly it's right above us, and it stopped. Incredibly brilliant light. No shape, no wings, no nothing, just this brilliant light. So I got out of the car, as did most of the guys in the theater, and I happened to be by the sex cop. You know, back in them days, they had a cop walking around to make sure you weren't smoking up too much in the back seat, smoking up your windows. And I asked him, what the hell is this thing? And he said, I don't know. And everybody's standing there, and it hovered right over us a good 5 minutes. We missed 5 minutes of Elvis Presley. And then all of a sudden, bam, in a blink of an eye, from straight overhead, out of sight over the northern horizon, just gone in the blink of an eye. No sound, no boop, 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 like a chopper, no engines, no nothing, just gone. So they're there. Anybody who thinks that this is the only place in the whole universe where there's living beings, I got a tower I'll sell them in Paris.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's one of the biggest insults to anyone with a brain that I can even imagine. It's stupid.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, I really feel that if the Pentagram would quit playing games and the government would say, look, we've got crash disks. We've got bodies. I mean, President Nixon took Jackie Gleason to see them. It's no secret. The word is out. So I really think that if this were announced, most people would yawn. Yeah, well, they've been programmed to accept this since the 1950s science fiction movies began being rolled out by Hollywood. Those were no coincidences. They're still doing it. We have come to accept ET as part of our culture.
Right. I'm older than you are, so I remember those movies back in the 50s. You had spiders, you had ants, you had all sorts of weird things, all affected by atomic radiation. They were giant, they were tiny. The colonel, what's his name, suddenly became 60 feet tall, or the incredible shrinking woman.
There was that, Lloyd Bridges made a movie, I think it was called Rocketship XM, and it went to Mars, and they actually landed on Mars. It was fascinating. Hold on a minute, we'll come right back with Harry, just a minute. Okay, welcome back. We are with Admiral Cooper, his once-a-month appearance, 2 hours a month, and we always take a look at fascinating material, usually historical in nature, sometimes the aftermath of World War II. Now, a quick note before we jump back into this. You're going to go to Argentina in February now. We've put it back several months for obvious reasons. There's too much chaos here with all this crap going on, and so it's set for February?
Late February, early March, 2 weeks. And this is going to be unusual, unlike any other patrol trip we've ever had. Normally, we go to Buenos Aires. We spend some days looking around Buenos Aires, tremendous Third Reich presence there. And then we normally get onto a plane and fly out to Bariloche, which is in the area where Hitler had lived, and we have vehicles run us around there, et cetera, and then we take the plane back to Buenos Aires. But this time, we are going to spend a couple of days in Buenos Aires, and we're going to get our own vans and drive along the coast, visiting many, many places that had to do with primarily submarine incursions, because U-boats were bringing goods and agents and valuable metals, precious metals, et cetera, into various places. There was an SS officer, I think he was a level of a captain, a Sturmbannführer or something like that, Walter Kutschmann. He escaped down there, has a huge ranch. He's dead now, but there's things on the estate we're going to look at. And who was his girlfriend in World War II? Coco Chanel.
Oh, that's remarkable.
Yeah. And we're going to stop at San Antonio Oeste, which is Caleta de los Loros, Parrot Cove, which is where U-boats were coming in and out all the time, bringing supplies, radio parts, agents, etc. Not only U-boats, but also there was a 90-ton sailing vessel called the Barbara that was coming in and out. Wooden sailing ships didn't pop up on radar. So we'll be there. There's other places along there where U-boats had brought things ashore, and there's caves in the cliff, and we'll visit that. All sorts of things. It's on our brochure. And then we wind up in Bariloche, San Antonio Bariloche. No, not San Antonio, San Carlos de Bariloche. Jeez. I never did well in geography. And we will
It's your diet, Harry. It's your diet.
My diet?
Your diet. Tell them what you ate today. Never mind.
Well, right now I'm sitting here looking at a glass of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, but you have such wonderful things to eat. You eat like the average American would like to eat. Actually, the average American probably does eat like you. You have these you always have these wonderful treats.
Well, my dinner today was nothing but meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and a lot of gravy.
Wait a minute. What about all these amazing treats that you tell me you have?
Like what?
Fun things. I've heard, anyway, maybe it's just on your trips, but you always like the sweet stuff.
Oh, yeah, my blood sugar meter doesn't like that at all, though. But, yeah, when we travel other places, Argentina, for instance, the little empanadas, they're great. And when we were in Europe, when we go to Austria, oh, they got some awesome ice cream shops over there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, love it. And when we were in South Africa, I ate babuti with monkey gland sauce. Sounds horrible.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Monkey gland sauce?
Yeah. My wife says, oh, God, you're going to get AIDS from that. Them monkeys have AIDS. Well, actually, it's nothing but ketchup with a lot of spices, but they call it monkey gland sauce. So you got to try what's in it, you know, the various countries. When we were in Argentina last time, we went to Parrish. What the hell does it say? I got his card right in front of me for some reason. It's laying on my desk here. La Parrilla de Julian. In other words, Julian's Grill. Well, we were in there, and this is not a place where they find Americans very often. Julian himself was so excited. He came and I'm the leader of the group, so he runs me back to the kitchen, which is open. It's at the back of his restaurant, and brought up this huge big chunk of beef and showed me where to cut a piece off, and then I cooked it back there, and then my table, we all ate it. So trying the different foods in different places, it's great stuff. That's part of why you go there.
Well,
not only the.
Come on, have some treats at home. Kay makes you some nice things at home. Desserts and things.
Oh, yeah. She's a great lady and a good cook, and she takes good care of me.
Don't tell me about this meatloaf and mashed potatoes. You have other things. You used to, you've probably eaten more entenmanns than I did. And I used to eat a lot of entenmanns.
Well, yeah, it's great stuff. And as you know, Charlie Entenmann has been a member for 20-something years. He's a member of Shark Hunters. He no longer owns Entenmann's. He sold it and put a big chunk of change in his wallet.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Well, he earned it. You know,
He earned it. He worked hard. His father, I guess, opened the bakery, and he picked it up and worked it. It's an American success story. Shame on him. He should have given all that money to the Democrats to give out to illegal aliens who don't want to work.
Oh, God.
That's the new American way.
Yeah, that is true. Is he listening tonight?
I don't know. I sent out the hot mail to all the members saying we're going to be on tonight. Tune in at rents.com.
Hello.
So, Charlie, if you're on the air.
If you're there. Yeah.
How you doing? I know Martin Fernandez is listening. He's our Spanish translator. He asked me how to get
Very
there.
Good. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So the trip will come up end of February, early March, which
yes.
will be their fall, prior to their snow season, which they've had snow recently in the area there of the estate, the former estate. Still is an estate.
Yeah, it's in the wintertime right now.
Man, I looked at pictures. I looked at a lot of pictures of Villa La Angostura.
Yeah, they pronounce it Visha. I don't know how LL comes out S's, but it's Visha La Angostura.
Angostura Bitters. Remember that one? That was another
yeah.
one. I'm wondering if it came from the same place. The point is, it is some of the most beautiful terrain on this planet. I have never seen more spectacular. There are seven lakes, one of which is Nahuapi.
That's the big one.
It's huge. That's big enough they could have had a submarine in it.
They do have their version of the Nessie monster. They call it Nahuelito. I don't think there is anything like it exists, but it's a local legend.
Well, if anyone's seen it and gets a picture of it, that's fine. Most big freshwater lakes have, not all, most of them have a story. And I think there are many cases where dinosaur, reptile, aquatic dinosaurs survived. Whatever it was that wiped out the land dinosaurs. I'm not surprised at all. No. What's the one up in Vancouver? Okanagan. They have one Lake Okanagan there, and they got pictures of it. These are real, and a lot of lakes have them.
Okay. Well, I never got to see Nahuelito, but then my former guide told me that Nahuelito never comes out when there are foreigners around. So, oh, damn, that's it. Doesn't like me. Yankee, go home.
Visha La Angostura. What a beautiful
place. They say it real
place.
Fast. Visha La Angostura.
Right.
Beautiful area.
I mean,
we eat there. Every time we go down southern in Patagonia, we eat there. And this is where Hitler lived, not Bariloche. They say Bariloche because you can find it on the map, but you go 60 kilometers more, you go through Visha La Angostura, and another 10 clicks is where you find Inalco, which is where Hitler lived.
So he was 10 kilometers past Angostura.
Right. And it's a quaint, little town, unlike Bariloche, which has just exploded. It went from about 400 or 500 people back in 1945 to 150,000 now. It's a huge resort. Yeah. Great fishing in the lake, great skiing in the winter up in the Andes. Nice town.
Oh, we've talked about this. If I had the money, I would buy property there and move there in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Oh, it's staggering. And I love the seasons. You in Florida, you don't care for the snow very much, nor do you care for 120-degree weather. So.
No, I'm happy right where we're at. I'm no longer back in my old hometown of Chicago, where you got a better chance of getting gunned down on the street than you have of dying from this scamdemic stuff.
You see where the mayor of Chicago, Lizard Lightfoot, has ordered the police to block off her entire block?
To go and burn down places and destroy the Magnificent Mile.
Don't mess up her neighborhood. No.
Yeah, right.
Another phony. They're all phony.
Oh, absolutely. All these big cities are run, I'm probably going to cost you half your listeners right now, but all these big cities in the U.S. are run by Democrats, screwed up by Democrats, and they're
destroyed
never going to change until...
No, they're going
down. They're never going to change until they get somebody in there who cares about the actual people and not about their power structure.
It's too late. L.A. is gone. Do you know how many people live on the streets now of Los Angeles? And this is a guest. I don't know. This is an official guest. I think it's
40,000, 50,000?
65. And I think it's probably closer to 100.
And that could be.
The disease, you used to be able to smell in L.A. Orange blossoms from the orange trees, and now you smell urine and feces. And it's legal to set up camp on the sidewalks. And there are miles and miles and miles and miles of these sidewalk shelters for the homeless, and nothing's being done about it.
I've seen the pictures of it, So, you know, it's a hell of a situation. First off, it never should have gotten to this point. Now that it is to this point, now what do you do? You got all these people, 65,000, we'll say, in L.A. What do you do with them? You can't just execute them all. You can't go find and buy homes for them and get jobs for them. Most of them are on drugs. Most of them have some kind of disease. What are you going to do with them? You can't just dispose of them, and there's no way to rehabilitate them. I don't know.
No, they have to go, honestly, in a humane sense, they need to put in labor camps to do public good. Clean up streets, clean the air, whatever.
There's nothing wrong with that. We did this here in the U.S.
That's right.
We did this in the U.S. back during the days of the Depression. They came up
with the
WPA and the CCC.
Yeah.
Labor camps.
Same thing.
Right here in Hillbilly Heaven where I live.
They get fed.
There was a church
care.
That was built by them. Right. Right. And the school here was built by the WPA. And many buildings around here, and the highway from St. Pete all the way up to Tallahassee, Highway 19, a four-lane divided highway, except down near St. Pete, it's like a six-lane divider, eight-lane, and it's Kamikaze Alley. But up here, it's four lanes divided out in the country. That was all built by the laborers. You put them to work. People, I never thought I'd say this back when I was a young man, but people need to feel that they've accomplished something, you know, to sit around and taking mooch money.
No, that's right. That's right.
It's no good, but to actually work and earn your own money.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they'd get housing, they'd get medical, they'd get meals, they'd get clothing, and they'd work. They'd
right,
work.
But the Democrats are saying, "Oh, that's
projects.
That's not fair. That's not real."
Oh, please. No. Sorry.
You know
well, what's going to happen
are.
Is obvious. The inner cities of Seattle, Portland, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, New York, on and on, are Democrat doomed, is what they are.
Uh-huh.
They're done. They're already done. They're already
but,
done.
And yeah, but it's all Trump's fault, though, you know. They'll tell you.
Of
it's
course.
All Trump's fault.
I know. No. Well, the Democrat interest, the liberal, progressive, Marxist, Leninist interests own the media. So that's what you're going to get.
It's the lamestream media.
All right. Let's go to our pictures. And if you're new to the program, go to guests. It's near the top on the left-hand side. It's a little banner for the program. Just click on that, and you'll see right there Harry's name and then Clark McClellan's book, and you'll see images. And I would like you to click on that. And we'll go to the page. Okay? Okay.
Roger that.
See if I can get my page to refresh here.
Don't ask me for help. I'm the most computer stupid person on the planet.
Well, here's what's going on with mine. This is a new Mac Mini, maybe 6 months old, maybe.
Uh-huh.
I see these banners up 4 or 5 times a day. Your computer had to be restarted because of a problem. Ignore or report it. So somebody's in my computer and they're restarting it, but they're downloading everything. It's obvious.
Isn't that comforting?
There's nothing there. They can have it. Nothing there.
I know nothing about Macs. I've never owned or operated a Mac, so I'm
wonderful technology, far better than PCs. simple.
I'll take your word for it, but I never get notices that people have been into my computer.
Did you see the picture of the would-be president, the camel, at the top of the homepage? And ask yourself, is this presidential material? Did you see it? Go to the homepage.
Okay,
go to
Rents.com. Rents.com. There we are, Rents.com. At the top, no, there's a picture of... Oh, Kamala Harris?
Yeah, you got to read the text.
No, I saw that. Favorite memories. Willie's bombshell story. No, I don't have time for her.
No. Well, there you go. That's the woman that brain-demented Biden is going to yield to probably within the first 6 months to a year if he lasts that long.
I'm thinking their plans are for 3 months to move Biden to Happy Acres and let Kamala Harris take over.
Correct.
If they win, which, please God, they don't.
No, it's not. Nothing is for sure at this point. Nothing.
No.
The camel is truly a hoe. That's what she is. And ask Willie Brown. She worked her way up through politics, sleeping with the right people. Certainly,
that's
Willie
what
Brown,
I've heard.
And then eventually married a multimillionaire, a Jewish gentleman. And so there is Jewish background in her family, I'm told.
Not only
slave owners, but you figure that the whole slave industry was a Jewish enterprise, and so
yeah, it was one tribe capturing other tribes.
Right, right.
Over
but
there,
it was
and
all,
then selling them.
To the Jewish slave trade. All the ships are registered in England. The names are... it is what it is. Most everyone knows it. But that never gets talked about. They want reparations from Western white Christian Europeans who built this country and were not involved with the slave trade. They didn't go over there and capture these people and bring them back.
Yeah.
They want reparations
for people who were never slaves, paid for by people who never owned slaves. My family has been in this country before this was a country. James Fenimore Cooper and also Peter Cooper from back then. James Fenimore Cooper's father was in this country in 1740, I think it was. There wasn't even a United States here then. So we've been here a damn long time. We never owned slaves in our family. I think slavery is a horrible thing. But doesn't matter what I think. Nobody in my family ever owned slaves.
Get this. There were far more whites held as slaves by Muslims in North Africa and around the Mediterranean than all the blacks that were brought from Africa to the New World. More white slaves. But no one gives a damn about them.
You're not supposed to know.
That's right. Okay. All right. Now, you've got all the pictures up there, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to go through those right after the break here in just a few minutes. This is going to be fun. We'll start with number one there. That's the cover of the book. And I think we have to salute Dick Allgaier, and I think one of his remote viewing colleagues who put that cover together. I can't remember which one.
Right, that was his guy named Daz.
As a matter of fact, I was
just talking to Dick about 3-4 hours ago. We did a film presentation, and he said, make sure to tell Rents I said hi. So, hi from Dick Allgaier.
Very good.
He's a good guy. Knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, he does. That is a terrific cover.
Yeah,
and
it sure is.
We'll be looking at it. Space, the Final Frontier, Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know. Now, I just want to repeat what I said earlier. The first director of NASA was Dr. Kurt Debus, D-E-B-U-S. Dr. Debus was Hitler's director of rocketry and engineering at Peenemünde during the war. So it was NASA was a German scientist extravaganza. technicians, engineers. It was a German program. NASA and the Germans took us to the moon. And there's a big argument about that. We know we had to win. So it is suggested that Stanley Kubrick was hired and paid to film on a huge soundstage the actual moon landing, so we'd be able to show that during the alleged real-time thing. In case something happened, we couldn't take a chance on failing. The Cold War stakes were too big back then. So there's a lot to it, and I know some of you feel we never went to the moon. It's a very interesting conundrum, the whole story. But the bottom line is, all of that technology came from German scientists. Most all of it. And it was a very big secret. Got a color picture of JFK sitting next to Dr. Debus at Cape Canaveral, then in one of the briefing rooms. Fascinating picture. Fascinating. The whole story is incredible. Very few people know about it. Very few.
It opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I do this 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I am not usually caught by surprise, but there was so much in here that it surprised even me.
Yes, yes, yes. And I promised you and our mutual friend I would find a photo of one of the artifacts that that Clark had, and I haven't forgotten about that, and I need to dig that up, and I will
right,
find
I understand.
It and send it. Okay. We're just about out of time this first hour, but don't go away because we're going to go through some fascinating UFO history and post-World War II history involving some of the most brilliant minds on the face of the earth. And no, they weren't all evil, dirty Nazis. So they were Germans. They were German scientists. And if you're told you do this work or bad things could happen to you and your family, you do the work. All right, hold on. Harry and I will continue in just a few minutes. We're going to look at Clark McClellan's new book. Finally, a new book. Back after this.